You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Freedom of speech has been a massive talking point in New Zealand over the last few days, following a decision by the Auckland City Council to deny Canadian far-right activists Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux from talking at council venues. Alongside this, 2 days ago, a story broke about a Warkworth woman refusing to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding, raising the question of where do actions and decisions interact with the right to freedom of speech. Now, to kick this discussion off, I want to talk briefly about this rising discussion surrounding this topic internationally, specifically looking at the incident in the US in the state of Colorado, where, much like our own Warkworth case, saw a baker refuse to bake a cake for a same-sex couple's wedding. Now, the reason I find this interesting is that on June 4th, the American Supreme Court ruled in favor of the baker in this case, 7-2 votes. The final ruling was based on Jack Phillips, the baker in question's own right to religious freedom and the hostility he received following the initial incident. In the case of America and a lot of other Western countries, government's policies towards religion remain neutral, but the denial to bake a cake on religious grounds does throw a spanner in the works. Is it more correct to protect the freedoms of religion in this case, or the freedom of a same-sex couple acting within the law? Does a law imply morality? Is it right to follow one's own beliefs despite the contrary sentiment within your society? I found a good example of this discussion happening between Australian comedian Jim Jefferies and political commentator and freedom of speech advocate Jordan Peterson.
Making people bake a cake for a gay wedding.
Making them do it?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
But here's the argument. So should they be able to deny making a cake for a black couple if they don't like black people?
Allowed to? Probably. That doesn't mean it's right.
Okay, so then we had the civil rights movement.
Yep.
Where they said black people, you had to serve them in your restaurants and stuff like that. And it did work and it did make our society better. But would you argue that that still wasn't right?
No, that was right.
Why is that different to now, if you didn't want to make a cake for black people?
Maybe it's not different. Yeah. Maybe I was wrong about that.
All right.
Going back to the Supreme Court case that ruled in favour of the baker, based on the clip you just heard, arguing that it is right and good to pursue progress, does the morality lie within the right to protect one's own beliefs, or does morality lie within society as a whole, as an accepting progression towards productive change? If it is right to follow the decisions of our greater society, then the incoming far-right speakers Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux seem to act as an opposition to that fact. This, of course, is all tangled up with Auckland Mayor Phil Goff's decision to prohibit these two Canadian speakers from talking at council venues. On the 6th of June, Goff took to Twitter saying venues shouldn't be used to stir up ethnic or religious tensions. Views that divide rather than unite are repugnant, and I have made my views on this very clear. Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux will not be speaking at any council venues. Don Brash has responded to this decision by now raising up to $50,000 to sue the Auckland City Council for their decision, saying that no government official should be able to dictate what political opinions are shared at council venues which are paid and funded by taxpayer money. Acting Prime Minister Winston Peters jumped in on the discussion with his talk here.
First of all, I wasn't aware that there had been a council decision on it. So it would be the question, on what authority did he make it on behalf of the council without a council hearing? But there may have been a hearing, I don't know. The second thing is, the real issue is, I'm not concerned to come down and give an account for Mr. Goff's actions, but had we been asked, we'd let them come. Because despite the fact that what they might have to say is the very antithesis of what nearly all of us believe here, we still believe in their freedom and their right for them to express it in free speech. Well, I'm saying that had we been asked, or was it over to us, and it wasn't in the end, we'd allow them to come on the basis that free speech is one of the most fundamental freedoms that we have, and we should be very careful who we expel on that cause, because the downstream historic record on that has been just disastrous.
As Brash and Peters have alluded to, it seems that the problem lies when deciding to draw the line, which from my point of view has not been achieved and also seems to be an irrational way of approaching this topic. Don Brash suggested that where freedom of speech goes too far is when speakers advocate for the harming of other societal groups, whether they be race, religion or otherwise. But this in itself, I would argue, allows for grey areas to form. Here's a direct quote from Brash's interview with Wendell Nissen on Radio Live. Presumably they cannot say, please go and kill somebody, because that would be illegal. But if they say, we don't like particular groups, well, that's free speech. I think they should be allowed to say that. Although Brash is right in a sense that this discussion around specific harm to groups is illegal, I personally would say that there is a point that he has definitely missed. The point I think Brash has missed is that hate speech in itself does not necessarily have to advocate for harm to do harm. As an example of this, look to genocides in Nazi Germany, Rwanda, both act as cases where the rhetoric surrounding a specific group being othered by that society escalated, stemming initially from a simple negative sentiment. In no way am I implying that we are on a path to genocide, but the point I'm trying to make is that hate speech in any form as an extension of the freedom of speech can act to formulate and exacerbate these negative views towards certain groups in a way that is anti-progressive, anti-productive, and in my opinion allows for that bubble between hate speech and freedom of speech to be pushed further and further until there is no distinction between the two. This form of freedom of speech is often used by specific political groups to justify the pushing of these boundaries. As an example, here is Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux, the speakers who are potentially coming to New Zealand, talking about their upcoming tour to Australia.
Hey guys, Lauren Southern here with Stefan Molyneux, and we have a very exciting announcement. We are going to be doing a speaking tour in Australia. And Australia is a fascinating situation for both of us because it really seems like you guys are at a crossroads. Do you want to retain your culture? Do you want to retain your borders, family, identity? Or will the boats keep coming? Will the no-go zones keep growing? And will you become another victim of multiculturalism? Who knows what the future of Australia holds, but hopefully we can bring some of the facts to make those decisions.
Yeah, hopefully we know what the future of Australia is going to be because we're going to help move the needle and shift the conversation because people do feel uneasy about the direction of the countries that they're living in, where those countries are going and what's happening. But a lot of people feel kind of nervous to talk about it because you go up against politically incorrect data and information and arguments. But we're here to help you through all of that. We're going to bring fantastic presentations with essential information that you need to know to make better decisions about the direction of the country that you have, the direction of the country that you're going to leave.
Other than that confusingly sinister music they're playing in the background, if there's anything to take away from that clip, I would specifically look at the phrase victim of multiculturalism, which, although not specifically referencing it, implies that immigration and refugees from other countries creating diversity around the world is something that is attacking us. Now, I have some problems with this. One is that if they come to our country, then they will be bringing their views, which, funnily enough, inherently stem from their culture, which means they will be bringing their cultural opinion to Australia and to New Zealand. Wait a darn second, weren't they just saying that multiculturalism was a bad thing? I'm confused. Maybe I will give them the benefit of the doubt and assume they mean multiculturalism as an opposition to a Eurocentric view, or maybe I won't, because undoubtedly either of these opinion options are equally as one-sided and reliant on a racially charged us-versus-them rhetoric. Honestly, in writing this report, I stared at the conclusion for a long time before getting anything down, but I think that's just because I'm not ready to form an opinion on my side of the fence. It's an incredibly hard task to draw a line, define a barrier between freedom of speech, inflammatory speech, and hate speech, because in the end, this is a sociological problem, not a problem of the individual. This is something that is, as a society, we must discuss, debate until we have a definition that can be applied in a way that benefits all members of our society equally. To help me begin this discussion, I'm taking it to my producers in studio because I'm too scared to try write anything much like a conclusion. As well as this, do remember that you can text into studio on 53955. I won't be taking calls during this segment because our show isn't 24 hours long and I can't talk to everyone about this, and I'm sure lots of people want to talk. So I have my producers in studio. What are we thinking in terms of... It's so hard.
Thank you for bringing us on that very inflammatory debate. That's cool.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. I don't know, I think you made a pretty good case, I suppose. There's quite a few things that you touched on that I hadn't actually really thought about. Like the whole thing about inflammatory speech, which, you know, anything that's being said that doesn't actually fall into the category of hate speech, which is quite bordered and defined by the law. So all of that speech that isn't directly asking people to commit crimes or whatever against a certain population, but still kind of stir the pot and blame a population or victimize a population unfairly. So I don't know what to do with that. I don't know if there's anything we can do about this.
I mean, the thing that I brought away from this especially was that victim of multiculturalism thing, and that sort of rhetoric in itself is saying that we as a Eurocentric nation, I guess to an extent, is a victim of immigration. I mean, we're talking about immigration and refugees for our Warrior Week as well, and victimizing us in that regard seems irrational in a way.
Yeah, but if you go back to the debate about freedom of speech, these are like views that we obviously, you and I obviously don't share, but they don't fall under the hate speech category either. So there's not much you can do regarding the law at the moment to do anything about that. At the moment, it's being fought with other tools, I suppose, with like us doing what we're doing right now. And, you know, like educating people. And there's a lot of groups and activists that are fighting for that. But I just don't really know if there's anything more we can do within the confine of the law.
Just not give them a platform, I guess, because if we give them a platform, we're just giving a rise to this discussion as well.
That's the point, though. Do we give them a platform to have the opportunity to have freedom of speech? I mean, that's the whole argument surrounding this. I mean, that's the hard thing. It's not a hard cut line. There is no way to define the boundaries between inflammatory and hate speech.
Yeah, then we go back to that debate about where do you draw the line, which I think is honestly still sort of a valid point to make, which is like, who decides what is right and what is wrong? You can say, and I believe that anything that is like a humanist point of view is right, and everything that turns people against one another is wrong, but that is in the end still my decision. And I can understand why people who share different opinions would disagree with me and say that it's not fair that I get to make the call on what is right and wrong, and they don't.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying before about education. Who is the one who gets to educate people? Because if you have these views, well, whatever view you have in your head, you are right, because it is your view. There is no way you can, well, obviously you can be educated otherwise, but who has the right to that education to say this or that? That's, I feel, the hardest part of all this.
Yeah, it's a really, like, we're playing on a really fine line. And the thing is, if you start restricting freedom of speech to an extent that is outside the confine of the law, I suppose, or if you make the law more and more broad in terms of what can fit in there, that can backfire in the other way as well. Like at the moment, we've got a rather liberal thinking government. If you give the tools to the government to decide who's says what and who's allowed to say what, and then you end up having a different government that is not liberal thinking, then they can act within the confine of the law and say that liberal thinking is wrong and that it should be banned as well. So,
speaking of our government, we got a text in saying musicians have been declined access into NZ simply because of their lyrics. What's the difference, Mr. Peters? Which is a valid point. I mean, what's Tyler the Creator wasn't allowed in.
I know.
He's allowed pretty much anywhere else.
No, I think he was banned from like Australia and the UK as well. He's got a history of being banned from countries.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, and also these people, the Canadian speakers that got refused to use that Auckland venue, they've also been banned from the UK and Australia. Mm. Oh no, actually they made it into Australia, but. Yeah. Other countries around the world have more restrictive laws than New Zealand when it comes to freedom of speech. Obviously, like the UK takes it quite seriously, and everything that is sort of like hate speech, I think their category is a bit larger than ours. People get actually banned from entering the country. They get refused their visas, whereas these guys can come in. They just can't speak at that specific venue.
Mm. But what's to stop them from speaking at like other venues or like actually going out and making public?
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing, but.
And we live with the internet. You can say whatever you want on the internet.
Yeah, so it's. I feel like it's almost like a false debate. Like, I understand why the council doesn't want to have people saying these things, these very inflammatory things, borderline hate speech things.
Yeah.
At a venue that you know, they don't want to be assimilated with them. But that being said, with the internet now, whoever was going to go and see these speakers speak are still going to be able to find
like videos of them. Exactly. Yeah. Like, there's only so much the council can police as well.
Exactly. You know? So isn't it kind of pointless, dangerous? Isn't it going to turn people even more so against any sort of liberal thinking? I don't know.
But the same thing about these speakers, like, who are they to, like, you know, go around educating people about, you know, victims of multiculturalism as well, you know?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.